Personal Attention Role Play by H. Felix Chow Bradley. Sound by Jesse Perlstein. Hello, and welcome to this video. A blonde woman with a pale, poreless face leans towards you. Today, we're going to do some Reiki energy healing to pull out any negative energy you may have. We're going to help you relax, relax, relax. Her blue eyes are wide with mascara. Her teeth are bright white and well-aligned. They peek out from her lips, which open and close in a mesmerizing pattern. I see that you have yellow in your aura, which means that you're spiritually aware. She moves her hands as if she's pulling threads from somewhere behind your ears, clicking her tongue delicately on certain words. We need to get rid of your negative energies. Her consonants are crisp and wet in your earphones. Your eyelids start to flutter. Her voice wraps around your skull. You shiver as it spreads like a swarm of tiny insects. Feel the energy of your third eye. What in the actual hell are you watching? You slam your laptop shut and twist to face your bedroom doorway. You didn't hear Jasmine approach from down the hall. All that yoga and meditation, you think with admiration. She's learned to move in total silence. Ha ha ha, you say. It's, you know, ASMR, to help me relax. I was thinking about what you said the other day, and YouTube has been recommending all these relaxation videos to me anyway. Like, it's probably been listening to our conversation so frequently that it knows what I need, or it thinks it knows, and I really want to be a better roommate, like, more chill, so I... Justine, you're rambling again, she says. She used to lie in your bed all the time, curl up with you, hang out for hours, play with your hair. You would hate watch straight dating shows together, shrieking with laughter and disdain. Lately, she just lingers in the doorway. You want to explain about the videos, the flow, the crawling yet pleasing sensation they give you, but you find yourself saying, "Sorry, sorry, 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 I'll be better." Justine, stop apologizing. It's fine. I guess. But when I said you need to find a way to relax, I didn't mean go watch some white girl appropriating traditional Eastern health practices. You can feel your face drooping. She still doesn't come in. Don't make your puppy face, please. I really can't do this today. And listen, it's great that you're trying out something new. I'm heading to yoga. I'll see you later. Let's order in for dinner, you say, hopefully. I'm trying to save money, actually. I think I'll just make some food at Anila's house after class. Don't wait for me, okay? Have a good night. She's out the door, mat under her arm, before you have time to be upset. Strategic. You flip your laptop back open and press play on Vicky Whispers. But after a few seconds of her fluttering fingers and tongue clicking, you turn her off again. Now that Jasmine's judged her, the flow is halting, unsatisfactory. Girl making stupid tapping noises on a tub of moisturizer. It's no longer relaxing. It's cringe. Another evening without Jasmine stretches before you, lonely and contemptible. You try to lie down on your bed, clattering a pile of books and old electronics to the floor. You've always looked to Jasmine to decide what you'd do together. You've been roommates for 4 years, existing in tandem, eating and smoking in bed, tending your growing family of plants together, gossiping in the bathroom while one of you showers and the other sits on the toilet, going out to bars and queer events with friends. Her friends, admittedly, but they have become your friends too. You're pretty sure they have. Just as you're pretty sure things between you and Jasmine are fine. You're just in a minor rut, having some minor issues. It happens in any close relationship after a certain amount of time. Your brother thinks that your relationship with Jasmine is weird and overly intimate. He has said this to you over the phone multiple times. He says it again this evening when you call him out of boredom or desperation. You are so obsessed with this girl, he says, disparagingly. This is his default tone with you. If you want a girlfriend, go find an actual girlfriend, someone who wants to date you, Justine. You hate it when people use your name as emphasis, especially when giving you unwanted advice. Try to calm down, Justine. Go get a real girlfriend, Justine. Stop treading water, Justine. You don't know anything about queer femme intimacy, Francis, you tell your brother. You think you understand my life, but face it, you're a basic mainstream gay and you need to get over yourself. He can take it. He's the successful boy child, the one who became a hotshot corporate sellout, an executive talent management consultant at some soulless entertainment conglomerate. You understand the words of his title separately, but when he says them together, your brain blurs. He lives in L.A. with his husband. Your parents are proud of him, even though you suspect they don't understand what he does either, other than fly business class to cross-national strategic retreats and collect a hefty paycheck. They practically congratulated him when he came out to them. They are not proud of you. They rarely check in. Mom and Dad weren't even that kind of Asian parents, Francis says, when you complain. They never pressured us to go into medicine or engineering or law. They would have supported you no matter what you decided to do. You grunt. Your problem is that you do literally nothing at all. So what are they supposed to say? That it's admirable to waste your life living in a dumpy apartment, obsessing over a girl who isn't into you? You are such an asshole. I'm not doing absolutely nothing. Your mind is racing. L'esprit de l'escalier, you think. But you forget what exactly that refers to. Something about snappy comebacks and staircases. I'm making rent. I'm writing like 20 reviews a week. I'm working constantly. You don't get to call me a failure just because I'm not a smug married millennial and don't have a dumb corporate job that no one understands. You're not writing real reviews, Justine. You're writing clickbait. And if we're going to get all snobby about working for the man, who do you think owns the site you churn out all that subversive content for, huh? You hang up on him. He's been a know-it-all since you were kids, a know-it-all and a perfectionist. Unlike you, you hid candy and chips under your mattress, lost bits of homework under piles of dirty laundry, never raised your hand in class, and never stuck with any extracurriculars for more than a month. Part of you wishes that your parents had been less lenient, that they had ordered you around, forced you onto a set path with no other options. You would rather die than admit this to anyone. Listicles don't just write themselves, you mutter, and then you laugh an unimpressed laugh because it's the stupidest comeback you've ever heard. You turn back to your laptop screen. Maybe if you write a couple more articles tonight, you'll feel like you've accomplished something. You scroll through the assigned topics. 10 reasons why Brad and Jen should never have split up, and 10 reasons they should never get back together. 17 movie adaptations that are way better than the books. 21 TV shows that advance the LGBTQI agenda.
Every time an Asian character has been played by a white actor in Hollywood.
7 reality shows that are totally scripted, and 7 that are definitely for real.
9 things Lana Del Rey has to say about the current geopolitical climate.
15 reasons why, no matter how many listicles you write, you'll never get a raise or health benefits. You start typing. You wake up past noon to the landlord's kids scrambling around upstairs. How can such small people make so much noise, you wonder? You wade through a pile of clothing and stumble to the kitchen to see if Jasmine's made coffee yet. You can't smell anything, but maybe she woke up early and left you some. The kitchen is empty. The door of her bedroom is open and her bed is made. When did she start making her bed? Or do you just never make yours? Another thought overrides all the others. Did Jasmine sleep over at Anila's last night? Are they dating? You thought they were just friends. Friends who go to yoga together 5 times a week, hang out increasingly often, and post a lot of stories together. Not as many stories as you and Jasmine post together. But Jasmine's never mentioned a crush, and you tell each other everything. Anyway, wouldn't you have noticed if a romance was developing? Wouldn't Jasmine seem different, smell different, breathe in a new rhythm, smile with a new intensity? You know her better than anyone else. Then again, the empty room, the empty espresso pot, the neatly tucked sheets, no texts, the absence of her warm body in your bed for the last few weeks. Your mind goes blank for a bit, the way it does when your thoughts start to pile up too thick and fast. You find yourself in the kitchen, scooping chocolate cereal out of its box, cramming it past your front teeth in large fistfuls, chomping on it with a singular focus that any yogic wannabe would envy. You don't stop until all that's left are little broken crumbs, until all you can feel is an immovable lump in your stomach, a throbbing in your temples, and a scraped, bloody stinging in your gums. You put the empty box back on the shelf. You pour yourself a soothing glass of water. What had Jasmine said? 5 glasses a day? Or was it 10? Or was it 10 liters a day? How many glasses are in a liter? You abandon the water, collapse back into bed. You yank a pair of earphones from the tangle under your pillow. After clicking around on YouTube for a while, you find some Asian-looking ASMR makers. ASM artists. No more white girls for you. No more appropriation. Jasmine's right. Asian voices are more relaxing anyway, you say to yourself. And then you think, no, wait, is that a stereotype? Does this mean that you, an Asian, have bought into the racist idea that Asians are more effeminate and therefore more soothing in demeanor and also better suited to care work? You start to sweat, but you force yourself to watch a video in which a Korean woman with perfect eyeliner and a pink mouth pretends to tweeze your unruly eyebrows. Her low voice undulates as she approaches to pluck, moves back to evaluate her work, approaches again, moves back again. You can't understand what she's saying, but you are mesmerized by her motions, by the metallic clicking of the tweezers, which by the end you can't believe are not actually pinching the tiny coarse hairs out of your face. You haul yourself to the bathroom and dazedly peer into the spittle-flecked cabinet mirror under the fluorescent light. It highlights all your secret wrinkles. Your stockpile of toothbrushes winks from its jar beside the sink. A wicker basket full of half-used face creams, hand creams, serums, lotion pots, toners, cleansers, tweezers, makeup wipes, nail polish, and cuticle paste looks at you accusingly from the top of the toilet tank. It's all yours, not Jasmine's. You have caterpillar eyebrows and a scarcity-oriented worldview, you say out loud. Jasmine loves to irritate you by stroking your brows in the wrong direction with one laughing fingertip so that they caterpillar even more. Stop it, you like to whine at her, but you love it, her attention bathing you like a ring light. She hovers so close that you can almost imagine her face is your own. Jasmine's mother is from Hong Kong like yours, but she looks like a catwalk beauty alien, all wide-set eyes and rosebud mouth, whereas you exhibit none of that intrigue. Your face is big and round like the moon. In high school, your nickname was Fivehead. Your mother, bird-like and shrinking yearly, calls you Stocky. She blames this on your father's family, who are from Guangdong. Farming people, she shakes her head. You haven't heard from either of them in months, which normally doesn't bother you, because Jasmine is your family. Hasn't she said so? Or was that you? She still hasn't texted or even sent you any memes. Should you go for a walk? Breathe in the outdoors? Instead, you return to bed, where ASMR, let me help you do your makeup, is waiting. For the second time in as many days, you wake up to the setting sun, reflected like flaming silk in the windows of the building across from yours. People are probably Instagramming the shit out of this one, but you are unmoved. You've been sleeping at odd hours and are increasingly disoriented. Sleep is a defense against your own thoughts, which, when you're awake, are an unstoppable barrage of paranoid analyses of Jasmine's increasingly distant behavior. That night, at a cabaret fundraiser for her upcoming surgery, your friend Annalise pulls out her phone to show everyone at your table a viral Reddit thread, a vigorous discussion of inner monologue styles, or lack thereof. People who have an interior monologue can't imagine what it's like not to have one, while those without one can't imagine the opposite. But we're all neurotic queers, says Annalise, waving her cracked screen at you, at the bar at large. Obviously, we all have several supremely vicious inner monologues running at all times. Personally, I can barely sleep because mine never shut up. A piping chorus of same from around the table. You say same as well, but a beat late, as usual. You flush and add, yeah, I totally can't relate to anyone whose inner mind is silent. I don't even think we could be friends. People are nodding when Jasmine says, well, I don't have one. Everyone turns to look at her. Annalise makes a face of mock horror. It doesn't mean that I'm never thinking, Jasmine explains, but I don't have, like, a voice saying things in my head all the time. Sometimes I just hear music. Sometimes I see images. She tilts her head to one side and smiles a little, as if gazing at a beautiful image in her head, something none of you can access. Everyone's plying her with questions, but you stay silent. You down your drink. Your head is pounding. Is Jasmine for real? Or did she just make this up to be different from you? Are you okay? Jasmine asks from across the table, where she's sitting beside Anila, who looks at you with languid annoyance over the lip of her glass. Jasmine has mentioned that Anila's sober and only drinks club soda when she's out. You don't answer. You scrape your chair back and lurch to the bathroom. You wash your hands a few times and splash water on your cheeks. Someone at a club once told you to splash water on the insides of your forearms to cool down, so you do that too. You can barely see yourself in the graffiti-covered mirror, but you know your face is dark red and lifeless as brick, the way it always gets with alcohol. You buy another beer at the bar and suck it down before heading back to the table. I want to go, you blurt too loudly at Jasmine. You drop to your knees and start scrabbling for your bag among people's legs. Jesus, she says. You know she doesn't want to leave, and you savor her authoritative tone when she tells you to wait for her outside and not to dare wander off. You can't walk home alone in your state. She may be next to Anila, but she's glaring at you. You know you don't have to go with her, you hear Anila say. You practically just got here. I can just call her an Uber. Jasmine is my best friend, you yell in her direction and stumble into the next table, knocking an unattended drink to the ground, where it splinters and pools, ice cubes skittering across the scuffed floor. She would never just call me an Uber. Justine! Jasmine is at your side. She grabs you by the shoulders and turns you from the stunned faces at the table towards the exit. You rejoice at the tight grip of her hands on you as she marches you out the door from behind. Outside, the air smells of urine and smoke. Jasmine pauses to zip up her jacket. You slump against the wall of the bar, staring at the sidewalk, which seems at once too near to your face and too far away to be real. Some French tourists ask you for cigarettes, but you ignore them. Can you stop being so intense? Jasmine says, taking you by the elbow and turning you homewards. You struggle to keep up with her strides. You're yelling at Anila. You didn't even say goodbye to Annalise. Do you even care about supporting her? Did you get this drunk on purpose to piss me off? I just miss you. You can't stop yourself. I feel like we never spend any time together anymore, and you're always at yoga with Anila or eating dinner somewhere, and I just don't understand. You hear your own voice, high and breaking at the edges. You are definitely wasted. You wonder if you will cry. What's happening to us? You're yelling now. You're clutching at her hands, her arms. She pulls you down onto a bench with her. Justine, she says. I didn't want to have this conversation with you, but maybe it's better if I just say what I need to say. She takes a deep yoga breath, which annoys you, even as you dread what's about to come out. We have gotten too entangled. We've become highly codependent. My therapist has been saying it for ages, Anila thinks so, too. You can't just do everything that I do, think everything that I think. We aren't the same person. Do you remember that time at the rave? Of course you remember that time. The only time you two ever made out. A few months ago, in a massive warehouse basement, industrial techno pulsing. Both of you decked out in matching black mesh, high on matching tabs of acid. Dancing with Jasmine, you felt your cells twinkling up and down your limbs. Her body was an extension of your body. When you kissed, it was the most organic movement you'd ever known. And then you heard some guy next to you freaking out, shouting, "Oh shit, Asian twincest! That is hot, ladies!" Jasmine pulled away immediately and smacked the guy in the face with her leather fanny pack. You both got kicked out by security. You loved her for all of it. "I found it so disturbing," Jasmine is saying. "We were this close to merging, like, completely. And even though that guy was a total creep, I kind of think he did us a favor. Snapped us out of it." You look blearily at the street lamps, the worn-down curb, the overflowing trash can beside your bench. "So that's why you're never home anymore." "Well," she says, also looking elsewhere, "actually, I've been meaning to tell you. Anila and I are going on a 3-month meditation retreat in Sweden. As of next week." You are silent. Quiet the mind, you think. You move your jaw around, run your tongue along the insides of your teeth. You imitate the relaxing mouth sounds of ASMR. "I'm not going to sublet my room, so you'll have the apartment to yourself. Think of it as a gift from me. I know you'll be a good plant mom while I'm gone, right?" "But you'll come back after that." "I don't know yet. I want to wait and see how things feel between us before I commit to renewing the lease with you. This is like a break for us to reflect. I'm not mad at you, Justine, I swear. I just can't live like this anymore." "Like what?" you yell, abandoning the soothing mouth sounds. You want to goad her into making at least one ugly face, saying one ugly thing. "Am I so hard to be around? Are you saying our whole relationship has been fake? All our interactions have been fake? You've been fucking faking it?" You suck in a lungful of air. "And I can't believe you talked to Anila about us. It's none of her business. She's trying to turn you against me, can't you see?" "This has nothing to do with Anila." She shakes her head slowly, as if disappointed you would even suggest it. "We both need to clear out our psychic clutter. That's what my therapist said. That's what I'm planning to do. You should try it too." She finally looks at you. You've given in to sobbing. In your own way, Justine. You wake up with a jolt, your heart already collapsing in on itself as it has every morning since Jasmine left. The curtains are drawn, but you can already feel the summer heat beating through the windows. The air is heavy and suffocating, and you are tangled in a thick layer of bedclothes. You try to calm your inner shakes by tapping your fingers on your temples and repeating, "I'm okay, it's okay, I'm okay, it's okay," until the syllables lose their meaning. Eventually, you extricate yourself from the sweaty sheets and clamber over the miscellaneous piles around your bed, emerging into the hallway. You hear an unusual noise coming from the kitchen, a shifting, bubbling sound. At first, you think you've left another experimental ASMR video playing on your Bluetooth speaker. Somebody's squelching their fingers through tapioca pudding, or carving kinetic sand into intricate mandalas. With Jasmine gone, you've plunged into a deep YouTube hole, hardly sleeping, speaking to no one. But when you get to the kitchen, a fetid odor hits you, unmistakable. Rotting food. You resolve to definitely not freak out as you open the lid of the trash bin. You haven't taken the garbage out in more than 2 weeks. Inside, the maggots are seething. Their tiny wet bodies writhe in a heaving, growing mass. Although your throat clenches in revulsion, you find yourself kneeling beside the bubbling container, peering closer, breath held. Their gelatinous movement, the sheer quantity of them, their simultaneous multiplicity and harmony. You are mesmerized by them. By it. Is it possible that the maggots are arranging themselves into a face? A mouth? Is it possible that they have guidance to transmit? You think you hear them say, "Justine," in their squelching collective voice, and then you catch yourself right before your face enters the depths. You throw open the fire escape door and drag the garbage can onto the metal platform. You boil a pot of water and douse the mess, and then leave it out there, gagging your way to the bathroom. After rinsing with some ancient dregs of mouthwash, you retreat to your room, which is less of a room now, more of a towering mound that you must navigate, fold by fold, in order to achieve a prone position somewhere in the vicinity of the bed. How did you accumulate so much material, you wonder, as you dig out your laptop, pull up your YouTube tab, and click on the first video the algorithm queues up? You plan to watch while clacking out another listicle, which will barely bring you to quota for a solvent week. But when the video begins, your brain jolts, and you lean in closer, squinting your dry eyes at the screen. The short bangs, the wide-set eyes, the slightly too big incisors. At first you wonder if Jasmine has created an ASMR channel from Sweden, but then the woman begins. "Hello, and welcome to my channel. I am Yuki ASMR. Today, I will be using my new 3DO binaural microphone to share with you more details of my extreme minimalist lifestyle." Her whispered inflection is unfamiliar, but there's something, a slight lisp to her voice, that pulls Jasmine's absence toward you, like a whale emerging from the black waters of your brain. Her empty room across the hall deepens and yawns. Missing her comes upon you now, unfurling, swallowing your week-long attempt at detachment. The old her, more precisely, the way she used to comfort you. Her fingers idly scratching your scalp, her low voice reading you into oblivion, the dim knowledge of her presence at the periphery of your sleep tunnel. She always let you drop off first. "Many of us have lost touch with ourselves," Yuki ASMR says over the sound of her hands rubbing together. The dry friction is pleasing. "As I have mentioned in other videos, I used to be addicted to material gain. I used to numb my fear of the world, my fear of the inner self, with the seduction of possession. I was addicted to online shopping, to online poker, to the capitalist rituals of acquisition and stockpiling. Now, after my awakening, I want to use my channel to help you manage your obsessive attachment to consumption. I will demonstrate how to reduce, to simplify, to whittle your life into a simple, polished nugget of well-being." In the background, you can see what appear to be Yuki ASMR's living quarters, conspicuously spare, empty even. You try to remember what your own bedroom floor looks like. You click subscribe on Yuki ASMR's channel and settle in. You wake up like a slow dip into a warm pool. You no longer emerge from sleep with the panicked fear of bottomless solitude. Yuki ASMR now accompanies you in both your sleeping and your waking life, seamlessly merging with you, your circadian rhythm, your somatic undertow, the whorls of your inner ear, where, she reminds you, the nugget of your truest self is stored. You play her videos day and night, sometimes on your Bluetooth speaker, sometimes right out of your laptop, but mostly with your best pair of earphones, the ones that make it sound as if Yuki ASMR lives inside you, speaks from within your ear canals, and manipulates your mind and body at will. When she approaches you through your screen, her pleasing features focused on you alone, your limbs liquefy, and you feel your physical self merge with your surroundings. You think of the maggots often, the way the many acted as one purposeful body. Their slick writhing, how it inspired both revulsion and fascination. What does a solo maggot sound like? No one knows. It doesn't matter. You have rid yourself of many mounds of detritus. For the past week, you have been using Jasmine's empty room as an everything-must-go warehouse to purge the apartment of excess possessions, both yours and hers. Bit by bit, you have separated your collective belongings into piles of similar items, photographed them, and posted them on the queer exchange hub. When people ply you with cheap wine and tarot guidebooks in exchange for the industrial sewing machine, French presses, grammar textbooks, toaster ovens, framed show posters, rubber stamp kits, brass candle holders, wireless keyboards, headphone jacks, bicycle pumps, sandwich makers, travel mugs, lint rollers, turntables, assorted loop pedals, piles of secondhand clothing and footwear, and 321 issues of The New Yorker, you gently refuse. "I'm reducing my material tethers to this world," you type back to them. "Thank you for your kind offer, but I don't need anything more." Jasmine has forbidden contact between the two of you while she is in Sweden. You are not sure whether this is a condition of the retreat center or whether she made the rule for you specifically, but although this anguished you weeks ago, you no longer dwell on it. You are certain that she will be proud and impressed by your progress when she returns. She will step into the spacious apartment and nod approvingly at its airy minimalism. You can't resist Instagramming your new aesthetic, tagging @YukiASMR in gratitude for your #minimalistliving, #decluttering journey, #spiritualstreamlining. Friends respond with hard-eyed cats, ask you whether you moved, compliment the effect of your plants against the blank white walls and the newly swept hardwood floors. They don't go as far as asking you to hang out, but you are, again, unbothered. You don't find yourself longing for human contact lately. "Hello, and welcome to this video," says Yuki ASMR, as she always does. Each time she posts a new video, your phone and laptop ping. A corner of your brain lights up in anticipation of the full body shivers you will soon be experiencing, lulled by the delicate syllabic slippages of her tongue against her palate, the flicks of spit as she opens and closes her pink mouth. Other ASM artists chew gum for maximum salivary impact. They brush their long hair as they welcome you into the hotel, the library, the salon, the ear-cleaning clinic, the space travel agency. They click their long nails, whispering, "Acrylic polymer," until your head expands from the nape of your neck into the far reaches of the room. They were your early guides. You have whispered your thank yous to them from between the hillocks of your belongings. You have been an ardent subscriber, liker, commenter, and patron. But now that you have Yuki ASMR, you don't watch any of the other channels anymore. You are no longer able to relax to the sounds of fingers tapping against superfluous objects. Their video seems silly and excessive. "This is not just another ASMR channel," Yuki ASMR murmurs. "The tingles of pleasure that you receive from my transmissions are not the end point, but the beginning. Now that you have rid yourself of your excess belongings, now that you have cleared out your physical space, you are ready, followers, for the next phase." You take a deep breath. You lean against your blank wall, legs stretched out on your bare mattress. You meet Yuki ASMR's direct gaze. Her face is a lustrous plain. Her eyes are dark. Her irises nearly blend with her pupils. Her hair sways in a liquid sheet. And her microphone is so sensitive, you're sure you can hear all the individual hairs brushing against each other with infinite gentleness. "Yes," you tell her, leaning into your screen. "Yes, I am ready." You wake to the vibration of your phone. You turned the ringer off weeks ago so you wouldn't be assailed by its ear-splitting cascades. You bring the screen close to your face. It's Francis again. He's been texting and leaving you voicemails. He's been threatening to call your parents to stage a family intervention. You tried to talk to him once to explain the journey you're on, but when you began to describe Yuki ASMR, his voice got loud, his syllables blaring out of your phone like hammers smashing your sensitive organs. Something about get yourself together, addictive personality, crazy online culty bullshit, and irresponsible childish. I can't hear you properly, you whispered in the direction of the microphone, and you ended the call with the soft pad of your finger. You get shivers from the most minimal gestures now. You are tuned in to the minute frictions of the daintiest touches. With Yuki ASMR's guidance, you are becoming one with the writhing mass of maggots. All your preoccupations, self-admonishments, and psychic excretions melt away as you succumb to the churning entity. You imagine this entity taking you over, covering your imperfect surfaces, filling your pores so that your insides merge with your surroundings, with the ceiling and walls of your empty apartment. Outside, you assume that summer is ending. You don't leave your apartment much. It's harder to be with Yuki ASMR when you are in public. No matter how you clamp your noise-canceling headphones to your skull, the excess of the outside still intrudes. It has become difficult to write even the required minimum of listicles. You fail to glean meaning from the scroll of article headings. You are overwhelmed by the quantity of words and the letters within those words, the lines and curves within those letters. You turn in work that displeases the editor. You are told for the first time to use more words rather than fewer. Your list is just the same item 15 times, Becky T. writes to you. This film is fine, a fine film that finished within a fine limit of time, you manage to submit later that week. You don't bother to read the feedback. Eventually, you are unable to type more than a few letters into the expanse of white screen. Those letters also seem excessive. Each time you think you have rid yourself of all your baggage, Yuki ASMR reminds you, you must look deeper. You will see that there are many more things you must cast aside. You stare at your beloved plants on their wooden stands that you collected one by one at the garage sales and thrift stores that you used to frequent with Jasmine. You are alarmed at their multiplicity, the density of their foliage, which up until recently you celebrated and encouraged, now seems disastrous, out of control. All that growing and growing, it will never end. New shoots here, fronds bursting forth there, two new leaves turning overnight into six, and so on. Soon there will be far too many leaves and protuberances to keep track of, and then what will you do? How will you reduce and minimize? You will have to keep using water, endless water, to feed them, and buy fertilizer and new pots when they begin to elbow their way out of their current containers. And this will go on, this demonic multiplication, this exponential abundance. Pulse racing, you carry them out to the fire escape in unwieldy armfuls. You try not to touch their many leaves, fronds, and tendrils. After you've thrown them all to the asphalt below, you pause in the doorway, catching your breath. The discarded garbage can is still out here, its metal lid reflecting white-hot sunlight into your eyes. You resist a brief urge to peer inside. Curiosity recedes easily now, like a ripple in a pond. The distinction between sleeping and waking has dissolved. The light comes and goes, blaring through your curtainless windows and ebbing again. Sometimes you remember Jasmine, a person you once relied on, you are fairly sure, a person who was often at your side, but in a detached and separate way, not like the way Yuki ASMR is with you, endlessly. You receive repetitive notifications that you haven't paid your internet or phone bills. Numbers are too much. And besides, your bank account is nearly empty as you've completely stopped composing listicles. Your landlord is often banging on your door, but you can't bring yourself to look at him, let alone have a conversation, a conflict. You would not be able to withstand the onslaught of mouth noises, the multiplicity of features on his face, the awareness that upstairs there are other people with multiple features, speaking multiple words, living among shelves, dressers, cabinets, and drawers laden with objects, thinking always of objects, thinking many thoughts all on top of each other, the way you used to do. In your empty apartment, you wear your noise-canceling headphones at all times. You stay plugged into Yuki ASMR. She whispers softly to you, each syllable a gentle drop in the still pool of your mind. Soon, when your data is exhausted, you will lose access to her channel. But this doesn't matter. Your merging will be complete by then. Your features are already dissolving, your body evaporating. You are melding with the ether, where you will never again be alone.